Welcome to the Shockwave Therapy Podcast. My name is James Woolidge, osteopath and clinical director at the Abbeyfields Clinic in Suffolk. We will be trying to demystify the concept of shockwave treatment whilst bringing together experts in their field to discuss the latest research. If you are deciding on whether to add this modality into your clinic or just improve the way you deliver it, then we hope this is the podcast for you.
Hello, mate.
Hello.
Uber, good to see you again.
Yeah, nice to see you too, mate.
And we've chatted a bit about, because we're going to teach, so the subject of this, obviously people listening, is like us talking about how ultrasound fits with shockwave. And I did a podcast about five or six back, you know, with Chris Myers.
Yeah.
But that was all about how useful it is to sort of screen out rather than screen in other pathologies. But we'll cover a bit of that today because we've talked about this. And now we're going to be doing some ultrasound based stuff for people that are using shockwave already with Venn Healthcare, right? So that got us thinking about things like syllabus, what we're going to be teaching on it. And then sort of as a focus to that, which I want you to sort of, if you don't mind summarizing, because you're good at the research, is that trial that came out last year. So if we can just, a really good example of how anecdotally we use ultrasound imaging was this trial on calcific tendonitis of the shoulder, right? Which is, I think I'm right in saying, I think it's the oldest one that we have nice guidelines for. Like maybe 2003, I think.
Yeah, I think so. 2003 is probably about right.
Yeah, long time, right? So just talk, because you sent that to me as a starter. So give us a summary of that trial, will you?
Basically, we know shockwave for calcific tendonitis is really well evidence-based. It works really, really well. And both me and you use ultrasound as a way of, one, diagnosing whether there's calcifications then in the first place and planning our treatment. So we're going to discuss that a little bit. But if we then go back to this trial that came out now this last year, 2025, they took 84 people and then they did real-time ultrasound for guidance for treatment. So they located the calcific deposits, they positioned the arm in a way that they could actually maximize where that was. And then they would dynamically scan while they were shockwaving to make sure that they were in the optimal position to deliver the treatment.
Right. Okay. Gotcha.
A little bit different to how most people would use it, because you'd go and scan, you'd find where it is, you know approximately the location, you apply your focused shockwave therapy, and voila, they seem to get better. Now, what's astounding with this trial is the results of it, right?
Yeah.
So you're 5.5 times more likely to get a successful case if you do their approach as opposed to the standard palpation approach. Now, so that's like a, you know, black or white situation, or red pill, blue pill, if you like, because you can't see what you can't see. But likewise, I think it's astounding how different the results were. Because before we had ultrasound, we were shockwaving these.
Yeah, yeah.
And even with other radiographic evidence of the calcifications, we kind of had to find our way. And the thing about focused shockwave is that it's almost like a diagnostic tool. You stick it on and you get the symptom when you hit the right spot, right?
I mean, the extra fascinating bit about that, when I looked down, I looked at the methodology and they used an Intellect, which is a Storz radial. So they use Storz radial focus, a Storz radial shockwave therapy, which we know, the evidence is a little bit ambivalent, right? But we all know, those of us that have used both, focused is your best bet, especially if you're going to get resorption. And so you think actually about that in the context of this trial. Radial is, as it says, radial, boom, it spreads about. So you'd think it'd be even less of a difference between landmark and ultrasound with a radial device.
Mm.
But we definitely know it'd be even more the difference, I would have thought, with a focused device, which is basically a pencil thin, straight through onto the point, right?
Yeah, you would think so. I mean, you know, the theory is that to get reabsorption, you know, the active part of that, or one of the active parts of that, is the cavitation.
Yeah.
We know that you need to get cavitation. You don't get it until you get like 0.3 maybe. Mm. You know, it's quite a high level of shockwave, and, you know, radial can't get there. You know, you can't get there.
Well, in this trial, apparently it did.
Well,
we don't know is the mechanism behind which it did it, but there's still a bit of mystery, but, you know, we're not actually breaking it up like a mini explosion, right? But
no, exactly.
It's obviously doing enough to knock on the door of the calcium lump, and then it's creating this immune response, and away you go, right? But I mean, I think they only used about 2.2 bar for 1,500 hits, which is not massive.
No, it's, I mean, it's great. It's a great thing for radial users, right?
It is. I mean, I certainly am a little bit biased when I teach, but I think it's just as good. But I mean, the other thing as well about that is that, I mean, that I think they've picked the best part of the body to test the difference between ultrasound versus landmark, because shoulder pain is notoriously not specific for the actual topography of where the patient's pressing, right? And
Yes.
calcific tendonitis, if anyone listening to this has not seen enough of it, I suppose, patients are in diabolical pain, and they use the whole hand to basically say it's everywhere. So the idea that you can palpate and think you're knowing where it is, apart from the fact you just go with the stats, and I think it's is it like 70%, I think, is supraspinatus, and then 15-15 is infra and subscap. But I've seen one where I was absolutely bolt on sure that this was a supraspinatus, and it was a massive chunk through subscap, and I could have been wafting along all over the place in the wrong area, unless of course you scan these things.
It is the other thing as well, like when you look through the research on the calcific tendonitis, is that they reckon you need to get it, the size of it matters, as in it's going to be much more symptomatic if it's more than 1.5 centimeters. Now, I've not seen many that have been that big, because that's a huge calcification.
And then I think the theory is it gives you a subacromial bursitis. It's constantly rubbing away, isn't it? It's more a mechanical issue than anything else.
So I think that there's two aspects to that. One, obviously, the size matters and the location and things, but if there are other pathologies that's occurring at the same time, right? So if you have a subacromial bursitis, would it be a, is it a good idea to go up there with a radial shockwave device, or even a focused at a high level? Or would you alter your treatment method a little bit? That's kind of how I tend to look at ultrasound and the role of it within shockwave therapy.
I think I've got another guy who, Luke, who does ultrasound scanning, and he's pretty good. I've learned from him that, when I pick those out where it's just a massively florid bursa, I send them straight off a steroid, and they have a steroid, and then I wait 3 or 4 weeks, and then they come back in, and then I treat them with focused shockwave, which I know we say to people don't treat for 3 months, but this is not a classic tendon problem. I'm just there for treating the calcific lump, right?
I completely agree, and I think that's where the nuance of using ultrasound scanning within our practice as shockwave therapists, if you like. I don't like that term, but okay, it's where we can be so much more informed about what's going on. Calcific tendonitis or non-calcific tendonitis. This is where, if we compare the research on non-calcific tendinopathies and shockwave, is diabolical. And there are plenty of reasons for that. There's a lot of variety of energy levels, protocols, and all of those things that we can hang that on. But at the same time, I don't think having a non-calcific tendinopathy, or rather subacromial pain syndrome, or rotator cuff related pain, or whatever you want to target at, is a bit of a wishy-washy diagnosis. And I think it's much better to scan it and see what is the pathology that's actually going on in there, and applying treatment, like you mentioned about the subacromial bursitis there, and getting the right treatment at the right point in time of that problem.
It's just it that's just reminded me of a case where you don't know, what was your lovely expression? You don't know until you do know. No, what was it you said about you don't know what's
You don't
underneath?
know what you don't know.
That's the one. It's really
Yeah.
quite simple when you said it again. I've got to remember that. But I picked out one when I scan, and I don't often scan lateral hips, but there was something unusual about the patient because they'd had shockwave and everything else. And this is a patient about 2 years ago, I think now. And I thought, well, I'll just have a little scan of that. And that they were an ex-rugby player, and I scanned right over the apex of the trochanter. And we often forget that calcific tendonitis occurs in any it can occur in any tendon, right? You always think about the shoulder. And there was this massive calcific lump, like right over the top of the trochanter, right in the glute med tendon as it attached. And it was a fair chunk. And I asked him a few times about, what had happened in his life. And then he started recalling that 3 or 4 times he landed very heavily on his right hip on hard ground playing rugby. And that the focus and he had radial shockwave for this. And they was and I sort of asked roughly about the approach, and they said, well, they were treating this sort of whole area where we tend to with a radial, your glute med into the muscle and this, that, and the other. So all we did, I put my pen on it, marked it exactly as I saw it, which was, let's say, that big, and then just did not move off that with my focus device with as higher energy as I could for about 3 sessions. And he'd had that, I think I can recall that him having this problem with his hip. He couldn't sleep on it for like 10 years. And then after 3 sessions, pain gone, which is one of those examples of where you just don't know until you see it. And then everyone was just saying it's just a normal gluteal tendinopathy. And it was this massive calcium lump frictioning right over between ITB. You can imagine how annoying that interface was. And near enough, all of it resorbed.
It's crazy, isn't it? And
Yeah.
like you don't know what you don't know. I had one chap in today, and he came in. I've got a bit of a sore knee, and I can't, walk far. If I stand on it, it starts aching a little bit. And I scanned him, and he had a calcification about 1.5 by 2.5 centimeter in his quad tendon. He
Yeah.
had one that was probably about, I didn't even measure it. I stopped measuring it in the patella tendon as well.
Oh, what, on
So
the same knee?
yeah, on the
I've
same
never
knee.
seen an up and down. I've never seen that.
Absolutely. And then he had quite a significant OA in his knee. And it was, it's just fascinating. That's the second one this week that's had both a quad and a patella
Really?
tendinopathy calcification. Yeah.
I have not seen one. I'm not. And did he have? Yeah, he must have had some metabolic issues going on, right? He.
I would,
Laying that
well,
much calcium in his tendons.
I did wonder about that. The one guy had, they both had an OA knee actually. And both of them been walking around with a slightly bent knee for forever, like just ignoring the symptoms. So I wonder whether that's just an adaptation that's naturally occurred, because that's not really where the pain was either. But this phenomenal calcifications.
So on the background, I mean, what we shouldn't do is I'm always aware of not trying to alienate everyone who hasn't got an ultrasound in their hand, right?
No,
But
no.
this is where, because we both know how, I think we probably would you say the same as me when we did our PG cert? I recognize it as probably the most taxing thing I've ever done. Did you find it was pretty arduous, right?
I think people underestimate it a little bit.
Yeah, they do.
I have these conversations in our clinics, and they go, oh, "Well, I'll do the scanning course, and then I'll be able to scan everything." I was like, "Okay, I did that, and then I spent 3 years scanning before I did the PG cert. And when I did the PG cert and went through that arduous training, my scanning just got so much better. And it's literally repetitions. And there's a couple of things. One, you need to know your 2D anatomy." Right. You then need to be able to move your hand independently of your eyes, as in you can't stare at where your hand.
I never thought I'd get to that point. And then, 5 years later, you do. Oh, yeah, I can do it now. I'm
Yeah,
so
you're
impressed
looking
with
at the
myself.
screen and you're just moving
Yeah,
your
I
hand.
know, yeah.
And then so there's that skill, which is really difficult. And then you've also got to be able to recognize what you're looking at. And so you have to have a like the fastest AI thing in your brain going, this is where my hand's going, and this is what's actually going on inside that knee or shoulder, whatever, at the same time. And it's really taxing. And I reflect once, I did my master's degree back in 2003, right? And so this master's was quite groundbreaking because they had ultrasound scanning as a module on the master's. Now I did that, and I never touched it ever again, until more recently. But I remember sitting there, and they were showing us all these grayscale images, and I used to come out of there completely like drained and headache and stuff, because I've sat there staring at the screen going, which part of the tendon? And it is taxing, but it is also great fun, right?
Yeah, it is great fun. It totally
Oh.
it's transformed our practice, right? We both agree with
Yeah,
that.
yeah. I think just in terms of being able to see what's going on underneath is a big skill. How have you found it's changed your practice, mate?
I think that my patient selection, and I'm a big advocate of communicating. Like communication skills with patients and saying the right thing and being able to pull it into context. If I had a perfect day in practice, I would be reassuring all my patients. I love that side of what we do. I mean, everyone likes to see pick out a pathology and go, wow, like we just did with those classifications. But the fact that you can take very anxious patients and go, look, this is just contextually, this is just a grumpy, lumpy shoulder. Look at your other one, it looks the same, but your pain is more on this side, is more about your weakness, your this, that, your other. I really like that aspect of it. But I think if you looked at my outcomes and your outcomes based upon this study, and we know that this makes sense, right? Is that what I see, because I've been around a long time and we've got focused and radio and this, that, and the other. And we see a lot of people where they failed Shockwave before. And I think when I pick at the patient a little bit about how the treatment was delivered and what part of the, the whole sort of thing, usually what comes about, the treatment was too vague. And I've been guilty of that in the past, right? It was a bit there, it was a bit there. How long did they spend a long time on this bit? No, they sort of traveled, they sort of treated the whole buttock. And I'm like, all right, okay, that's, I'm all for myofascial release, right? But sometimes you're missing the key bits, right? And I think that probably with ultrasound has sharpened my mind to be more pragmatic about that. That's the pathological tissue. And let's make a decision there. Let's have a steroid. Or let's really load it up, because that's the mainstay, right? Got to load the tissue. But in and around that, my choice about A, B, or C or D is definitely better. So I would definitely be pretty confident sounding here. Our results from, Shockwave would be better than the non-ultrasound guided a little bit. Do you know what I mean? I think,
Well, I
I kind
can't
of
speak
want.
for me against anybody else, but I certainly know me against me.
Yeah,
Where,
that's the better way of saying it, right? My
yeah,
ultrasound
so
would not be getting results
before
like
and
that.
after for me, anecdotally, I would say my outcomes have significantly improved.
Yeah.
And you touched upon it there, where it's about patient selection, right? So it's about selecting the right people for the right therapy. And the amount of times I've gone, this is not a shockwave problem. This is something we're going to laser, or we're just going to offload that for a little bit, and we're going to just let that settle down. I think the clearest case for why you'd need ultrasound in your clinic is an Achilles tendinopathy, right? If we look at that, and maybe we'll talk about plantar fasciitis at the same time, right? So when you scan an Achilles, right, what are you looking for? It's
Me
the
personally,
well, yeah, go, yeah, go.
well, I mean, I'm looking
Not
for,
test.
I'm I feel like I'm on the examination on the wrong side of this now. But I number two things, I rule out a paratendinopathy, peritendinitis. Number two,
Perfect.
I rule out a retrocalcaneal bursa. I can't believe how many I've ruled out where I think that's just a slam dunk Achilles. I go, that just needs to be a healed shoe and some ibuprofen for a week. And the amount of times I would have been treating those, and they're not getting better. I'm like, oh. I think, and I've also picked out a few big old tears that were otherwise, they could hop on the leg, they could do everything you're supposed to do, and yet you look at them and you go, that is hanging on by a thread. And I didn't know that until I scanned it.
Absolutely. I think you've hit the nail on the head, really, with all those things. If you can rule out retrocalcaneal bursitis, because that changes management, peritendinitis changes management. If you then have an insertional tendinopathy and a mid-portion one, that changes management and prognosis, I think. And then, do they have neovascularization, which is a big one? They tend to be more painful. They tend to be a little bit more resistant to treatment, although they tend to do really, really well. But the part of that is because you have to modify your treatment more to accommodate for the pain that comes with the neovascularization, because they tend to be much more sensitive, right? So just in that quick, it takes what, 2 minutes to scan an Achilles tendon?
Well,
It
hopefully, the way we're going to teach it, yeah. We've got to get that
and
point.
when you and when you train your eye in, but those 2 minutes are so valuable, because you can modify your treatment. We also know from some of the research that you're going to have a poorer prognosis if more than 50% of the tendons affected by the tendinopathy as well, because they're further down the line. So it might take you longer to get those better than you would do with somebody who has a tiny little speck on the tendon, for instance. Tears is a big one. Obviously, tears is a whole nother ball game that can mean that your recovery from shockwave isn't going to be really slow. One of those cases is in lateral epicondylitis, right? There's research on it to show that if you have a significant intra-subsystem tear there, you're going to be very much less likely to have a successful outcome with that than you would do if it was a tendon problem. And the lateral epicondylitis is important too, because there's research as well that shows that if you have calcifications in lateral epicondylitis in the common extensor tendon, it makes no difference to the outcome.
Makes no difference.
So yeah, no difference. So then, are the calcifications location dependent? Like in the shoulder, it's rubbing against the subacromial bursa, acromion, it's space occupying. So that becomes a very painful thing. Reflecting on those quad and patella tendinopathies that had massive calcifications,
But not
then
necessarily the problem area.
is that the problem? Yeah, it's just there. Then I've got another one, it's a Haglund's at the moment. And it's got insertional tendinopathy and a retrocalcaneal bursitis going on at the same time with neovascularization in the insertion. And so, we're having to do a bit of everything. And so we're shockwaving the insertion. We are offloading with a heel raise. We are also EMTTing for the retrocalcaneal bursitis to see if we can calm that down a little bit. And then on top of that, as you start to go on, I say, oh yeah, I know this is really painful, but at some point you need to have a look at my knee. And I say, well, I was going to talk to you about your knee, because you can't straighten it, can't you? He goes, no, I haven't been able to straighten it for 2 years. So he's got an OA knee as well, which is probably why he's loading his enthesis so much. And so, it becomes more and more complex with time.
So what do we going back to why I started this podcast is trying to get people to understand, where should they go, right, for resources and stuff like that. So what are we saying? We are lucky enough to get invited abroad now. We're like, pretty special doing our education and in the UK. we get asked this question more and more about imaging, and so we have started something in this country with Venn Healthcare to try and sort of adapt. I think the purpose of it is, I'm saying, is how do we maximize outcomes with Shockwave by some element of ultrasound imaging? And what I think that we shouldn't be, I think if you're really going to take it seriously and you want to be looking at the carpal bones and the ligaments and everything else and be able to write reports such that, you know, another medical professional would listen to you, you've got to do the PG cert, the case accredited like we've done. But I think we've both agreed, along with Benoy is going to help teach us, that there are other parts of the body that you can scan fairly simply without too much of the necessary dexterity skills. Like Achilles is the classic, right? Achilles and patella tendon, pop it on, wave it side to side to a certain extent. I've made it sound really easy there, haven't I? There's a bit of technology and there's a bit of eyes, but that's the idea behind what we're trying to create starting, when's the first course we've got going on?
Middle of June. That's already fully booked. So the next one now is going to be early September.
All right. And I'll put a link, under this to some of the courses that we're running. But I think I don't think we should. We'll be trying to. The difficult balance for everyone listening to this is like, well, you're telling me I can't do Shockwave without imaging? I'm going, no. But I think that if you've got difficult cases like we brought up today, things that are not getting better very quickly, definitely I say to people now, if you can't do imaging yourself, definitely create a partnership with a local clinic that's got a sonographer in it, and just use them more. It's not that expensive, and patients are very happy to go and get an imaging done that's relatively cheap, and then it just gives you that much more information to go on. So that would be my main message today. And if people were interested in doing it to help their Shockwave, right, they don't need to do the full PG cert, I don't believe. I think we could probably...
No, I think, you know, I'm reflecting back to our introductory course that we teach. And there is, we have a slide, you know, is imaging necessary?
Right.
And I think we came at that when we kind of put that in there as a safety thing.
Yeah.
You know, Shockwave is obviously very safe. The safety profile is probably beyond anything else that we're kind of doing in the clinic. And then it's morphed into something more, isn't it? Like, so now we have location-based, is ultrasound guided versus landmark? And for certain conditions, it certainly makes a big difference. I've, like you, lateral hip, and being able to find calcifications there because they tend to be very painful in there. And then the other thing is like, how do you monitor treatment? And, you know, how do you know that you're on the same spot the next time you go?
Yeah, yeah.
The patient's arm is probably in a different position. So there's a case for ongoing scanning for each appointment.
Yeah.
Just because you know you need to be on the right spot. And then you're also monitoring the change in it. So we know things like even an Achilles or a patellar tendinopathy, plantarfasciitis, they tend to become a bit thicker. That's the kind of one of the features of it. So you get this intra-fascicular swelling and fluid coming in. And that's one of the first things that we see go with Shockwave, isn't it? We see shrinking of that. So you can kind of see that there's progression there. And so there's a case for the ongoing scanning as well. But you're absolutely right. It's not that complicated. Simple, not easy.
No.
Right?
It's like driving a car, right? You know, that sort of thing is you learn to drive a car in 3 months and then you really learn how to drive over the next 5 years.
Correct.
And both of us have sort of joked, and you know, I still sort of feel a bit, what's that nice expression where you'd feel like you're still not really qualified. You're like constantly doubting yourself. Am I really seeing that? Am I really looking at that? But then of course that's the slightly more healthier version of, I believe I'm right about everything, right? I still look at some people, especially as you know, you look at a 75-year-old OA shoulder and you're going, I can't make much of that anatomy because it's all lumpy, crunchy, and you have to do as best you can, right? But I like to think, well, you know, give me another 5 years, I might get there at some point. But anyway.
I mean, the course we've designed and we are working on is obviously about tendinopathies, the low-hanging fruit when it comes down to ultrasound scanning. And it's things that are dead easy. Plantar fasciitis, Achilles, patella tendon, lateral epicondylitis, and we're going to talk about shoulder as well, only because it's one of the most commonly shockwave joints. And because of this study as well, we kind of need to show people.
Yeah, we can't ignore that, right?
So although it's one of the most complex things to scan, it's also something that you need to be able to scan.
You're
going to be treating and using ultrasound, I guess, to guide your treatment.
And for those people, you know, would you go back? Because we both started. Did you start with the Clarius handheld?
I didn't. I bought a Mindray. The Clariuses were just about starting out at the time when I bought mine. So I bought this other thing, and it was a £15,000 machine. It had a 614 hertz probe, and it was really good. And when I compared it to the Clavius, I thought my images were nicer, cleaner. Once you start with something that's quite basic, because that is still a very basic machine, and Clavius is as well. It's a great entry point, isn't it? It's quite cheap to get hold of if you call 3, 4 grand cheap. But I think it's something that you quite quickly outgrow.
Yeah, that's the problem. Everyone outgrows them. Everyone does.
And I think, and it happens really quick. You see them on the forums. They, you know, they're, oh, I'm selling my Clarius. I've bought something else. And there's two things to it. One, what I didn't know, and this is what I found out when I bought my next machine, was that I was missing things with the old one. So tears I couldn't see, like in lateral epicondylitis, like, there was tears that I couldn't see. There was small calcifications that I didn't even know was there. And so because of that big jumping machine, suddenly I can see all these things. And I went, wow, my life is never going to be the same. Just because I could see things before that I couldn't before. It's as simple.
Technology moves forwards pretty quick, right? And I know that we both had the because Venn Healthcare, apart from doing the teaching, they've developed a partnership with Vinno, who, to be fair, I hadn't heard of before, but they've come to our practices, haven't they, and shown us their kit, which is compellingly great and relatively inexpensive compared to some of the big boys on the market, right? So we were impressed.
I've been aware of Vinno for probably 6, 7 years, I
Well,
think.
look at you ahead of the times. Ah,
Yeah,
how did
well,
you know that?
you hear of them because they're used quite a lot on the continent.
Yeah, they're big in
So,
Spain, aren't they? They're the number one in Spain, I think.
I heard about it from Holland. They're one of the biggest suppliers of ultrasound or MSK ultrasound in the country. Same in Spain, and what I heard about them was that they were really great machines for the money. Back then, that was 6, 7 years ago, but I couldn't get hold of one when I was buying one because they didn't have a distributor, right?
And now they've got a distributor.
They do,
And
and
our courses will
great.
be using Vinno, I think, won't they? So that'd be, people can have a good test of those. And that's quite good, I think, because we've got to get behind the fact that we believe in it, because we've seen the images and they're really good. And, from what our
I've been
perspective,
really pleased.
we've both got Konicas because we did our PG cert in it, right? We were using them on our PG certs, and once you get used to a machine, you're like, oh, this is pretty good, right?
It's about your workflow. So, but what I've seen, I mean, I picked up the machine on our last Shockwave course there because it just literally arrived that week, right? So I was like, oh, I need to have a play with this thing, and I was amazed. Like I couldn't believe how good the imaging was. And I scanned. One of the staff member's husband came in for a bit of a consultation, and I scanned his quad tendon. I was like, oh my God, the detail I could see in this. I don't know.
That was their
It's
laptop one, their portable one.
No, that was the card one, the S300 I played on. And, I played on both of them, and they're comparable. They just have slightly different setups. But, having on that big screen as well, it's a bit
Yeah, that's
shiny, isn't it?
nice.
Shiny new coin.
We love a shiny new toy. Right. Anything else you want to talk about that? We covered most things. I think most people get our opinion on this. Pretty much obvious, isn't it, really?
Well, I think we're pretty aligned with these things, so we're not arguing about it. I think, the other thing to talk about sometimes you mentioned about ruling things out as much as anything else, and it's the high level of neuropathic driven pain in some tendinopathies. Most people obviously know about shoulder and elbow tendinopathies very high. They know it's lower in the lower limb, but one of the most key ones is plantar fasciitis. And so this is where scanning gets more complex, right? So we think we've scanned the plantar fascia. We can see that it's a bit thickened. Sometimes that's a normal, sometimes that's an abnormal. You can also have a lowering of the fat pad. So you've got to wear of the fat pad, so that's thinner. And that could be also the trigger of the pain. You don't know. Then you have the tarsal tunnel. The nerve comes through there. It can sometimes be sensitized for exactly the same reasons that we're getting the plantar fasciitis for. And so then, do you need more than the tendinopathies eventually? And that's probably the natural progression, right? Because you've got to be able to scan the tarsal tunnel, the medial tendons. You could have a medial tibial tendinopathy, a subtibialis tendinopathy. You could have a sensitization on the nerve. And, you could also have a plantar fasciitis going on at the same time. So not to make too light of it, as in it's easy to do, but we got there, and that means anybody else too, right?
I hadn't thought about that. I mean, that's the other nice way about the fact that the imaging has occurred is that there's a tendency for all of us to fall into that mistake, which is we always hunt for the one pathology that explains everything. And the amount of times you would see, because you're around there anyway with your probe, and you're asking the patient so where have you got your pain? You got here, there, and there. You use that to sort of guide you a little bit, and they're a little bit vague. And you go, well, while I'm here, I'll have a look at the tarsal tunnel. I'll have a look at your tibialis posteriorly. Oh, lo and behold, they've got that as well as a plantar fasciitis. You go, ah, we've got two pathologies. But because they're one of them so dominantly painful, they've not really brought to light the fact they've got that. And I mean, how often do you see that they have more than one pathology? Quite often, actually.
More often than not,
More often than not, they've got a little bit of that, and they've got a little bit of that. And you would probably miss quite a lot of that, I think, if you didn't have a bit of a scan around and a look around. Yes, you could argue that you, if you're really diligent with your palpation and examination, but look, we've both been around a long time, right? We can all get a little lazy with that. And you go, well, I think it's just plantar fasciitis, but you could, with a scanner, it's so much easier. Oh, look, and you stick it
Question
off.
to you then is the reason why both outcomes, anecdotally at least, have improved, is it because you're better at picking out all these comorbidities, as in there's more than one thing going on and you can actually manage the whole condition or the whole limb better because of it? I think that probably has something to do with it.
Right. I'm gonna go and go to Canada in about 10 days. Thought I'd just forget
Nice.
about that. Thanks very
I'm
much.
off to
A bit of teaching out there.
Stockholm just before you go to Norway as well.
Oh
You
yeah, I did Stockholm
flying
last
here
year.
and everywhere.
And then I'm going to Oslo, your old neck of the woods.
Yes. Yep. So I'm trying Stockholm this year.
Right, okay, thanks very much for coming on. I'll speak to you soon, mate.
Well, cheers, mate.
Cheers, see you later. Bye. Cheers.